It's over to you now. If you have a question, Brenton will move around with a microphone. He's spotted someone here and the question's about to be asked. I think you'll recognise the questioner.
Thanks for the presentation,
Barry. Thanks, Noel. The committee system that you outlined from, you know, the local church to the conference, et cetera, is all true. But when your constitution says that for the next level up, you have the administrator and this one and this one and this one that are ex officios on the next committee, it stops the diversity of gender and age and the inclusion, usually, of your younger members of the church community being involved in it. And I think that is a very serious problem with the committee system and requiring committees end up talking to themselves as the... You've got to have administrators, but you have the administrators and then the pastors. And your actual inclusion of functioning lay people and your young people and your women on some of the committees is limited because of the structure of the committees. That's, I guess, an observation.
Yep. I'd probably need an example then to have a look at. I know we really worked hard over the last several years to try and bring about what you've said and change that. So the number of required positions on a committee have been reduced. Having said that, there are still some. Obviously, on executive committees, you need the president and the secretary and the treasurer of the conference. I think they're the only three that are actually required on there. Apart from that, you will have some, obviously, some work people who are employed, ministers, teachers, etc., and you have some lay people. On most now, there is a requirement to have at least one, if not more, young people. So there has been development in that regard, but it is still challenging because at the same time, there is a definite attempt to keep committees and boards at a functional level. You know, as the larger they are, the more difficult it is to actually operate. So to keep something small while at the same time doing as you say is challenging. I think we've made some progress, but we could make more.
Barry, within our organisation, how many of our committees would have more lay representation than employed representation on them?
I can't answer that exactly. It's Shane, isn't it? Yeah. I can't answer that exactly. I do know of recent years, particularly when it comes to remuneration and benefits, those sorts of things which impact on employed people, we have put many more lay people on those committees. I know at the division we've set up a committee toward the end of my tenure where we have a committee we call the Division Wages and Allowances Committee. For many years, that was many employed people. We changed that so it was primarily lay people. So that's an example. And then there are others too where we have, certainly on our boards, our major boards, like Sydney Amherst Hospital, Avondale College, I think we've probably got, who's here? Sydney Amherst Hospital, we had a majority of lay people on there. I'm not sure about Avondale. Getting that way, isn't it? It has certainly improved, Shane. I say that. But there's probably more we can do. So, good point.
Barry, Michael Chamberlain.
Yes, Michael.
You wrote, once upon a time, a PhD on church management. Is that correct?
Church organisation.
Church organisation. Would you kindly, but very briefly, outline the thrust of that and tell us how much of that you have seen in your own administration?
Thank you, Michael. Not as much as I would have liked to, simply because my major point, if I can say that, was our history, Alan White says that in our organisation structures we can be flexible. We don't have to be stuck in a rut. We can make sure that our organisational structures advance rather than inhibit our mission. And my recommendation was that we reduce our organisational structures. Certainly that was part of the impetus behind why we reduced the number of unions early on. But the reason I've outlined there as my first point, our failure to do further organisational rationalisation, is a mark of my frustration that we haven't been able to achieve that. I think I pointed out how difficult that is to achieve, but that doesn't mean we can't endeavour to do it further.
Just wondered how many years ago we established a committee to handle child abuse cases.
Okay, that committee, that was more than a committee, it was a structure, if you like. It was an office that we set up about 1999, so that's 17 years ago. Now, we did have a process before that, but basically it all came to the division secretary, which was my role when I first went to the division. But then we set up I think some of you might have an exact date, but it was either, I think it would have been 1999.
Hi. You mentioned at the beginning of your presentation that the next step for the bureaucracy is death, unless major changes are made. Mm. Are there any other changes you would recommend other than paring down the conferences, for example, in Australia?
I think a number of things that we have begun to do. For instance, more focus on a mission statement that we're all committed to. And that's why I think discipleship is a very good direction. Focusing on the fact that we are becoming disciples, and we are in turn to assist others to become disciples. That involves nurture, it involves all that we have. I think that refocus on why we exist is always very, very important. So focus on mission and then identity. What is our differentiation? While we are very similar to most of the Christian community in many respects, we still have points to differentiate that give us a reason for being. I think we need to remind ourselves of that, while not forgetting the other things as well. What is it that makes us unique and special? Those are probably the primary things that we need to give attention to. Caring for our people, focusing on people, not just task, people orientation, as well as task, getting that balance right. Those are some of the big things, probably many other things as well.
Thank you, Barry.
Oh, hello. How are you, Peter?
Good. I've attended conference sessions now for over 30 years, and I've seen a distressing trend over that period, and it's becoming more and more ingrained. There seems to be no agenda items in conference sessions anymore that come from the constituency. The conferences don't call for agenda items anymore. There seems to be the whole agenda process. It seems to be bound up, fixed even before the session begins. How can we, as church members, engender a little more freedom and input from the wider constituency of the conference?
Thanks, Peter. I will mention this, there are some conferences that do have what they call remits, which are, in fact, items that come from churches, straight to the divisions, straight to the conference session. So there are some. But having said that, most operate in the way that if a church board or business meeting has a concern, has an item, they'd like it to be channeled to the executive committee first. And from the executive committee then, they like to be able to do the appropriate research and then place it on the agenda of the session. And that's certainly what you'll find most conferences are encouraging. I would hope none say, no, we don't want anything with the local churches, because that would be totally counterproductive. But if local churches have concerns, they should make sure those things get on the agenda of the executive committee with a request to go to the conference session. And then the executive committee, which is again the representative body, will move that forward. But again, some conferences do have remits where I think it's pretty much, if a church puts it in, it must go to the floor of the session.
Thank you, Barry, for your very wide-ranging presentation. Very good. Two questions for you. Your reference to bureaucracy. Do you consider the church manual a bureaucratic instrument? And two, what do you think of local churches who make very little use of the church manual in their decision-making process?
Tricky questions, Wolf. Let me answer it this way. In our church, we have three categories of documents that hold us together as a worldwide Seventh-day Adventist church. The first one is constitution. And we all operate under a constitution, the model of which is given by the General Conference, and within which there are elements that are flexible. The second one is policy. We operate under a policy guideline, which is not of the same level as the constitution, but nevertheless is a guideline as to how we should operate generally in the functions of the church above the local church level. I don't like that. Sorry, I was determined I wasn't going to use that word above. Outside the local church level. And the third one is the church manual, which is primarily for the local church. Now, the argument can be made that we need those to keep us together as a global Seventh-day Adventist church, because if we didn't have such documents, we would all be going off in all directions. So you can certainly make the argument you need those three. But I see them in an order of priority. Constitution, it's a legal document. Policy, it can be made into a legal document because it can be used in court if someone wants to bring something against us. And then church manual, it can also be legal, but not so much so. So of those three, the third one is more flexible. Because I used to sit on a committee at the GC called Church Manual Committee, where we would make changes from time to time, and a lot of changes. I think the answer I would want to give is, I think we will do better in working together if we have such documents that do ensure some sort of flexibility, some sort of continuity operation. At the same time, based on what I said earlier, there are situations where that just will not work. And we must use our sanctified common sense in those sorts of situations. That's probably all I will say. Oh, what was that, Wolf? Sorry. All right, I'm going to answer that by saying, I wish they would use the church manual. Okay? I think it has been worked out through much experience. Sure, it's a global document, and there are probably specific situations. But I think local churches which don't use the church manual are playing with fire. Okay?
Barry, I think this is breaking the rules, but I'm going to ask a question if that's okay. I'll make it short. Barry, other union conferences in the world have gone ahead and made decisions about ordination without reference to gender. And I'm wondering why, under your watch, union conferences in Australia didn't move that same way.
The way I'll answer that is, number one, we're all aware there is a very large diversity of viewpoint on this question. Within our own division, there is a huge diversity. And it's not necessarily all those in the island missions are against it and all those in the union conferences are for it. My experience going right round the division is there are very strong opinions held both ways. And wherever we can, when there's strong opinions held both ways, we need to try and work through proper processes to bring about a resolution. I believe that we didn't take any action in the Australian situation or the South Pacific situation because we were really hoping that at the General Conference session, opportunity would be given for diversity. We didn't move ahead, hoping that that would be the case. And personally, I believe that is the best answer to the situation. It's not perfect, because it will still bring a lot of challenges if there was diversity around the world in this question. Because ministers, as you're aware, unlike elders, serve a broader constituency than local elders. It's much easier to have local elders in a given church who can be male or female if that church agrees. That is, ministers in a broader area where you have a number of churches, some of whom will be in favour and some of whom... So, the complexity is there administratively. So we didn't move ahead because we were hoping the global church would do that. I think that was the reason. What will happen now? Well, I'm not there anymore, so I can't comment on that. But you're right, there certainly have been a number of unions globally now who have. Some have done away with ordination altogether, and just give a commission credential to everyone. Some are in fact ordaining people of male and female. So there's different responses to the vote.
Barry, earlier communication showed up on your board. I'm thinking of putting the face of the church out there, like newspapers, a wider scope than maybe just the local. What is the problem? Is it the editors don't pass it? Is it that the editors don't receive it?
So you're talking about giving...
Items.
Yes. Items to local papers, etc.? I don't know. I've been pleased to see in our local papers, and Brent and others have been getting... Yes. Good things into our local papers. I see our schools featured, etc. But sometimes, yeah. Let me just say this. A few years ago, we did some research to find out what the community thought of Seventh-day Adventists. The overwhelming response is they didn't think anything because they didn't know us.
Exactly.
Okay? That's one of the challenges. And one of the reasons for that is often we struggle to get things on TV, often we struggle to get things in the newspapers, and when we do, it's often misrepresented. Unfortunately. I think we have to be vigilant, and I'm pleased to say that we have a number of people in our ranks now who are being vigilant and getting things into.
And the last thing, ADRA. Apart from us, who knows what ADRA is? Should we call it by its proper name? I'm just a suggestion. Adventist. Yes.
Yeah, don't get me started on that one. Good comment.
This perhaps is a reflection. In the mission statement, you talked about focusing on Jesus Christ, and I think that's wonderful that we are putting that in print in terms of a short summary. Would there be a paradigm shift if we actually acted that in all our organisations to the fore, that everything that we do actually focused on making a change because we exist because of Jesus Christ? I think much of the discussion that we've had this afternoon has been about the organisation, the systems, keeping it going, whatever, and perhaps the mission is forgotten a little bit in all of our work. I just wondered if you had a reflection on that perspective.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. You're right, of course. And it's been wonderful to see in some areas of our organisation and our church a real focus on Jesus. And that's a given. We must. I think part of what I was saying about discipleship to me is a refocus on Christ, because he was the one who said, go and make disciples. So when we're talking about discipleship, we're talking about disciples of who? And of course, he is the focus of that. Good point, Gail. Thank you.
We have three people identified with questions at the moment, and I think at the end of that, we'll bring the formal questions to a cease.
Good afternoon, Barry. I've been in Australia since 2008, and this is just something I've observed and I want to share. I think at a local conference level, there's too much in the hands of the executive and the local lay persons. For example, in our conference, there's about 64 odd churches, and each one is in isolation. Is there a way that the local churches, the leaders, can connect more, whether they be from Sabbath school to family ministry to women ministry or whatever, that they can, you know, learn from each other, connect with each other, share with one another, enrich one another in a way that makes the constituency feel like it's really for the people, the lay people of the churches, instead of just leaving everything to the local conference?
That's a very good comment. I have observed that many of our conferences are endeavouring to do the kind of thing that you have mentioned. Not all, but many are, and are setting up various processes of consultation. I notice many conferences, before there is a conference session, the administration will go around to churches or to districts and will work through some of the agenda items and listen to the people. I notice that sometimes lay advisories are set up in the conferences. And I'm sure there are many other things. Because I haven't been working right at the conference, I'm not aware of anything. We do have one of our conference presidents here this afternoon, at least one, that I've spied, and I could easily pass a question on to him, and I'm not going to look at him, but unless he wants to make a comment. You want to say anything, Mike? Am I right, though? There are many processes now being set up. Yeah, I think that's right. I hope there's no intention here. It's just a matter of actually making it work in the best possible way, because that brings strength into our church, what you're saying.
Our last major church world restructure was 1901, 40 years after we began. It's almost triple that time period now. We've had no major world church restructure, and yet we've had the onset of aeroplane travel, technology, a huge range of things that could make our communication so much more effective and less costly.
Even car travel, though.
Yes. Has any thought been given to how we can incorporate that into our management? Because to me, that allows us to have a lot more grassroots representation involvement and minimise a lot of the executive ex officio stuff that we currently have.
Dave, a lot of thought has been given over the years, and I could, you know, go for a long time saying the amount of thought. Basically, though, there hasn't been the will to make it happen. And it takes, as I illustrated, I think that's why I gave you the stuff on what we had to do in 2000. It takes a huge amount to make a major change like that, especially in our organisation, because we are a constituency-based organisation. If we were a hierarchical organisation, it could be done just like that, because the dictator at the top could say bang, 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 and it's done. We don't work that way. Despite the fact that some think we do, we don't. We have to have broad-based constituency will. And it is always very easy for me as a constituent to say, he needs a change over there. But when you come and say, you need a change right here, hang on. This affects my employment. This affects where I'm located. Whole lot of things suddenly come into play when you actually go to make a change that actually impacts on people, and it is really, really challenging. Should we do it? You bet. For the very reason that we said.
My question, Barry, is also about representation, but not at the conference level just. There are committees set up that are not, that don't have the same kind of representation as you do on your executives, for instance. Committees that develop curriculum or projects or things, some of those are done at the general conference level by people from the USA, and yet they are supposed to be world things. Are there any sort of regulations about how the other parts of the world should be represented before these curriculum decisions are made?
That was subtle, Janet. I know what she's referring to. Look, the short answer is no, there are no regulations as such. When an ad hoc committee is set up, it's ad hoc. I would like to think, and it's true, that in many cases there is much more representation. I referred to this encyclopedia that I was involved in earlier. When that was originally done, it was almost exclusively done by people from the United States with one or two representatives elsewhere. Now, every division has a strong representative, and so there has been progress in some areas. In other things that I can think of, yes, there is a lot of representation, but there are still situations like the one the children's Sabbath school curriculum, which has not had the feedback from elsewhere that it probably should have, and other things as well. So we've improved, but there's room for improvement.
I'd like to thank each one of you for coming to our meeting this afternoon. I'd like to thank those that have asked questions and participated in the discussion. And particularly, I'd like to thank Barry for making time at what's turned out to be an inconvenient, perhaps, time in his life for being with us this afternoon. Please thank Barry.